Okay, we get started. Thought it was neat to have a shadow on the foreshadowing for salvation. So we're going to talk about foreshadowing among the patriarchs. So what do we normally divide the Bible up into as far as periods? Three? No, not what, not how many, not three. Doug asked the open, the closed-ended questions. I'm the guy who asked the open-ended questions. It says three. Patriarchal, Mosaic, and Christian. Yeah, that's what I had on there. So, who are some of the patriarchs? Abraham. Huh? Noah. Yeah. Who else you got? Isaac and Jacob. Huh? You can call Adam out? That's what I did. I kind of had that way up through, kind of had Joseph there. He was kind of a patriarch. They're all in the patriarchal period. So that's kind of where I stuck with that one. Didn't include Noah on there. So, we're going to talk about where salvation was foreshadowed with these folks. So, went back to Genesis. That would be to Adam. Okay, all right. Then the Lord called to the man and said to him, "Where are you?" He said, "I heard the sound of you in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid myself." And he said, "Who told you that you were naked? Have you eaten from the tree which I commanded you not to eat?" The man said, "The woman who you gave me to be with, she gave me the tree, and I ate." Then the Lord God said to the woman, "What is it you have done?" And the woman said, "The serpent deceived me, and I ate." The Lord said to the serpent, "Because you have done this, cursed are you among all the cattle, and more than every beast of the field. On your belly you will go, and dust you will eat all the days of your life, and I'll put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise you on the head, and you shall bruise him on the heel." I thought it was interesting the way it goes. His fault. The next one goes, his fault. Pass, that's, is that the first case of passing the buck? So, what just happened to God's creation? It's not perfect anymore. Okay? They have the knowledge of good and evil. Did they have it before then? Nope. They didn't know what was good. They didn't know what was evil. So, who's to blame for their failing to keep God's law? Because I only had one. They are. Okay? Anybody else besides them?
Okay.
He gave him a rule. Before I flash it up there. Who knew the consequence of breaking that rule? Satan. Did they? Did they know the consequence of breaking that rule? They didn't know the consequence of breaking that rule. What was their state? They were like children. They were innocent. They didn't know it was good. They didn't know it was bad. They didn't understand consequences because they'd never had any. Satan did. Told them a half-truth. We do. But they didn't. At that moment. Before they bit into that fruit, whatever that fruit was, most people think it was an apple. I don't know. They realized a whole lot of things. One of those is that they were naked. Okay. So Adam, Eve, and the serpent were certainly responsible. All three. I kind of think, did I ask that question? Who's the most to blame and why?
In a sense, they're telling the truth because Eve did go tell Adam and the snake did tell Eve. It was a chain of
Yeah, there is a chain of events. I'm going to repeat what you said. You know, Eve told Adam and the serpent told Eve. But the serpent knew, where he was telling half-truths, wasn't he? He was there and he was telling half-truths. Huh? Yeah, he said, you'll live forever. You'll be just like God. You surely will not die. Yeah. Before that, they didn't have, like I said, I'm going to be repeating what you're saying, so you'll have to slow down a little bit for me to catch up. But they didn't have doubt, but they didn't need to have any doubt. They had everything they need, didn't they? They had what they needed from God. But this started the ball rolling as far as what was going on. So how is it man's seed will bruise the head of the serpent? I want to get to this question since we're 10 minutes in. How is it her seed will bruise the head of the serpent?
Mm-hmm. He's talking about Jesus there, and Jesus will give man hope, eternal hope.
Okay. You talk about Jesus. Jesus will give eternal hope. What happened when Christ rose? What happened to the serpent? Who's the serpent? What's another name for the serpent? Satan. Okay, if you want to look that up, it's in Revelation 12:2 and also in chapter 20 of Revelation. But what happened to him? He was chained. Think that hurt his head? Well, actually, you're right. Man does deserve to die, and Satan was right. Man does deserve to die. But Christ came to say, I'm going to take that away from you. You may deserve it, but I'm going to intervene and make it where you have a path back to God. Go ahead.
His death, his resurrection, was the seal of the promise. Once that happened, the devil knew that he was
I lost. I just lost. And I don't think he thought he lost until he resurrected. That's right. And that's when he bruised his head. That's when her seed bruised his head. So that's in this foreshadowing. Let's move on. Now the Lord said to Abram, I just went ahead several chapters, and Abram, go forth to your country and show, and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great. And so you shall be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you, and those who curse you I will curse. And in all the families of the earth will be blessed. So Abram went forth as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed Haran. So we're into the next patriarch. Why did he leave the safety and security of his home? God told him to, but do we do everything God tells us to do? So what really made him leave?
His faith.
He had faith that God would keep his promises. He says, okay, I don't know where I'm going, and the world is a scary place. Scary place now, but it was a scarier place then. You go down the road, it was scary. It was a scary place. Remember, Satan was quite active in the world at this particular time. Go ahead.
You know, we look at Abraham, or Abram as he is called here, and it's almost like, well, it's not really, but it's similar in a way, to a move that we make. You know, perhaps we are asked, or we apply for a new job that is going to require us from leaving our home to go to another place.
Right. Right.
What lies ahead?
Yeah, there's the.
In all the days of Abraham's life, you know, he had such faith in God.
His faith stayed up here most of the time.
Most of the time.
He had occasional dips, but most of the time, Abram's faith stayed high. And it said, I don't understand it, but I'll do it. And that's faith. I don't understand it, but I'll do it because you said to do it. And I trust in you. And that's where he was coming from. How about, what promises did he make to Abram here? Everybody's moving their lips, but I'm not hearing any volume. Through the seed of Abraham, all the nations of the world will be blessed. That's one. Right. And it was the land of his enemies, which is how it's cited here. Land of his enemies. Innumerable. Kind of like, oh, as much as the sand by the sea, as much as the stars in the sky. Okay. So, here are the ones that he had is, I will make you a great nation. That's the one, as much as sands by the sea, as much as stars in the heaven, it says in other places. I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you, and in all the families of the earth will you be blessed. That's the big one, number three. Which promises may not have made any sense to Abram at this time? He's 75, and he's leaving with a... Cool. Number three. Number two, number one probably doesn't make a lot of sense either, does it? Okay. Make him a great nation, and through you all the families on the earth will be blessed. Because he didn't have any kids. 75 years old. Sarah would have been 65, right? She was 10 years younger. So, moving on. This one goes back into Galatians, though. Looking back to what was said here. I actually said in a different spot, but it's basically the same thing. You foolish Galatians, who bewitched you before whose eyes Jesus Christ was publicly portrayed as crucified? This is the only thing I want to find out from you. Did you receive the Spirit by the works of the law? Or by hearing with faith? Are you foolish? Having begun by the Spirit, are you now perfected by the flesh? Did you suffer so many things in vain, if indeed it was in vain? So then, does he who provides you with the Spirit and works miracles among you do it by the works of the law or by the hearing with faith? Even so, Abraham believed God, it was reckoned to him as righteousness. Therefore, be sure that it is those who are of faith who are the sons of Abraham. The scripture foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, preached the gospel beforehand to Abraham, saying, all the nations will be blessed in you. So then, those who are of the faith are blessed with Abraham, the believer. So Paul ties it back in to what was promised to Abraham here to the Galatians. What was the problem in Galatia? Remember, Galatians was one of the first books written by Paul. And it was, they were trying to get him to go back and say, you got to keep the law and what you've learned about Christ. You've got to keep them both. And this is before the Council at Jerusalem. What? Well, yeah, you got to be saved by both. I'm not sure how they did that, but for some reason they did that saying that you got to keep the old law. That's his original lie, yeah, is you can save yourself. Why did Paul draw upon Abraham for righteousness, particularly in this instance? God said he was righteous, but why is it important to go back to Abraham when you're talking about the law?
The promise that was made to Abraham that through his seed all the nations of the world would be blessed.
Okay, the promise that all nations of the world would be blessed through him. But I thought because it was 500 years before the law of Moses. Everybody keeps saying how righteous Abraham was. He wasn't justified by the law. What was he justified by? Faith. Exactly. That's exactly Paul's point, is the law can't make you righteous. It always was faith. It always will be faith. Okay. What is a reference back to the promise to Abraham? A great choice for Paul. Why is that a great choice?
It's simply a time reference. This happened before the law.
No, it was meant, what did the law do? What did the law do for us? Huh? What? A custodian, okay.
It was the law that brought us to Christ.
Okay, the law brought us to Christ. What does Paul say about the law? Huh? Showed you how lost you were. The only thing it did was it showed you just how wrong you were. It did the same thing eating the fruit did in the garden. It told you how far away from God you were, because now you knew what was good and bad. That's what the law taught you. Same thing that that you taught when you ate the apple in the garden. Same thing. So, back to Genesis. Now, it came about after these things, and I've gone now to 22, now another 10 chapters forward. Now, it came about these things that God tested Abraham and said to Abraham, Abraham, and he said, "Here I am." He said, "Take your son now, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering to one of the mountains of which I would tell you." So Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey and took two of the young men with him and Isaac, his son. And he split wood for the burnt offering, and he arose and went to the place of which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham raised his eyes and saw the place from a distance. Abraham said to his young men, "Stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go over there, and we will worship and return to you." So it's a test. What did God ask Abraham to do? Yeah, you're ahead of me, which you probably said the same thing. Same thing God's going to do, okay? He said, "Take your son and offer him up as a sacrifice." Does that look like some foreshadowing? Pretty strong stuff. Did he appear to question what God asked him to do? Huh? He had 3 days to think about it, yeah. But as soon as he did it, he says, "Okay, I'll chop the wood. You two guys come with me, loaded it up." I don't think he did. And remember, Isaac, Hagar's gone by this time. So Isaac is not a little guy. He may be a guy like this. He said, "You two guys stay here. This is, of course, if you're going to kill your son," he says, "I don't want anybody around. This is between me and him." He did. Well, he suspected something. He didn't know anything. He had faith. He says, "I don't know how this is going to work out, but God has made three promises to me, and in two of those promises, I got to have offspring." And he's had a lot of dialogue with me to say, "Through your son, from you and Sarah, not through you and Hagar, through you and Sarah, there's going to be blessings." He knows something's going to happen, but he doesn't know what. Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac, his son, and took in his hand the fire and the knife. So the two of them walked together. Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, "My father." And he said, "Here I am, son." He was standing next to him. I don't know why he would say, "Here I am, son." But he said, "Here I am, son." And he said, "Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" Abraham said, "God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." So the two of them walked on together. Isaac is beginning to crank through his head a little bit to say, "What's going on here?" But good son. He has faith in his father. How prophetic is Abraham's response to his son? Very. Well, I didn't make that a really closed-ended question, but you did. He says, "See, God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering." That's pretty prophetic. Okay, moving on. Then they came to the place of which God had told him. And Abraham built the altar there and arranged the wood, and bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called from heaven and said, Abraham. And he said, here I am. I think that was his standard response. He said, do not stretch out your hand against the lad and do not nothing to him. For I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Then Abraham raised his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in the thicket by the horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the place of his son. Abraham called that name of the place, the Lord will provide, as it is to this day, in the mount of the Lord it will be provided. So God stops him, says, I've provided a lamb. I've provided a sacrifice for you that's acceptable to me for my purposes. Who else do we see having faith here?
Isaac did.
Both of them. Abraham and Isaac. Didn't God know Abraham's heart? I think he did. Didn't it demonstrate to Abraham something about his faith that he was able to follow through? He does, but he knew his heart. He just needed to see whether he was going to follow through. I mean, Abraham's like this with a knife. He's ready, and the angel says, stop. He says, okay, and he stopped. Then the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time from heaven and said, by myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son. Indeed, I will greatly bless you, and I will greatly multiply your seed as the stars of the heaven, as the sand which is on the seashore. And your seed shall possess the gate of their enemies. In your seed all nations of the earth shall be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice. So Abraham returned to the young man, and they arose and went together to Beersheba. And Abraham lived at Beersheba. Kind of the end of the story as far as what he had done, but what promises are stated again? The big three. Okay? The big three. For us, number three is the big one. That one, through your seed, all mankind will be blessed, is why we're here. So what story did this story with Abraham and Isaac foreshadow? God sending his son and allowing him to be the father offering up his son for sin. And that's all in capitals because it's the Father in heaven offering the son from heaven for sin.
He actually did it.
He did it. He followed through. Jumping over to Hebrews. For the law, since it is only a shadow of things to come and not the very form of things, can never, by the sacrifices which they offer continually year by year, make perfect those who draw near. Otherwise, would they not have ceased to be offered? Because the worshipers, having once been cleansed, could no longer have had consciousness of sins. But in those sacrifices, there was a reminder of sins year by year. For it is impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sins. Therefore, when he comes into the world, he says, sacrifice and offering you have not desired, but a body you have prepared for me. In whole burnt offerings and sacrifices for sin you have taken no pleasure. Then I said, behold, I have come, and the scroll of the book is written of me, to do your will, O God. And this is out of Psalms chapter 40. So he's referring back to who? The writer of Hebrews. Jesus. Okay. So what was wrong with the sacrifice offered under the law? The blood of bulls and goats couldn't do it. They were blemished. They weren't perfect. Right? What else couldn't they do? Exactly. They couldn't take away your guilt. They couldn't cleanse your conscience. Remember, that's something Paul talks about. He says, in Christ, you can have a cleansed conscience. You couldn't have that under the old law, but you can have it under Christ. So who's the psalmist referring to? Obviously, to Christ. So, now going into another 20 chapters later, into Joseph. And it's not the whole story of Joseph, because we'd be here till 2 in the afternoon. Then Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph, and they hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon. And when they had shaved him and changed his clothes, he came to Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I have had a dream, but no one can interpret it. I have heard it said about you that you can hear a dream and you can interpret it. Joseph then answered Pharaoh, saying, "It is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer." So Pharaoh spoke to Joseph. "In my dream, behold, I was standing on the bank of the Nile, and behold, 7 cows, fat and sleek, came up out of the Nile, and they grazed in the marsh grass. Lo, 7 other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly and gaunt, such as I had never seen in ugliness in all the land of Egypt. And the lean and the ugly cows ate up the first 7 fat cows. When they had devoured them, it could not be detected that they had devoured them, for they were just as ugly as before. Then I awoke. I saw also in my dream, and behold, 7 ears, full and good, came up on a single stalk. And lo, 7 ears, withered, thin, and scorched by the east wind, sprouted up after them. And the thin ears swallowed up the 7 good ears. Then I told it to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me." So Joseph's been in Egypt for quite a while now. He's gone through Potiphar's house. He's been in the prison. He's got a lot of time that he's spent there. A lot of time since when his brothers sent him there to get rid of him. So who really drew Joseph out of the dungeon? Same person that put him in the dungeon. Well, Potiphar put him in the dungeon. God. Right. He put those dreams in Pharaoh's head, didn't he? And by that time, there had been enough notoriety between the baker and the cupbearer, right? And which one didn't make it? I think it was the cupbearer. Okay, the baker was okay. He was restored back to his position. Was it the cupbearer? I don't remember. Do you remember? Do you remember, Henry? It's one of those two. I didn't look that up. You're going to look it up now. Okay, so one of those were back in the court. Of course, if he's the baker or the cupbearer, he's very close to Pharaoh. So he's going to kind of say, "You know, I remember this guy in prison that 2 years ago I said I wasn't going to forget, that I forgot about." And he brought it up. But God put that dream in his head. God also gave, and rightly so, Joseph said, "God gives me the interpretation. I can't interpret it. I'll just tell you what God tells me." So, had dreams always been a blessing to Joseph? Nope. Remember when he had the stalks of corn and they all bowed down to him? And then you had the sun and the moon and the stars and they all bowed to him? His family wasn't very happy about that. Matter of fact, his brothers grew to really, really hate him. So, now Joseph said to Pharaoh, "Pharaoh's dreams are one and the same. God has told Pharaoh that what he is about to do. The 7 good cows are 7 years, and the 7 good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one and the same. The 7 lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years, and the 7 thin scorched by the east wind will be the 7 years of famine. It is as I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. Behold, 7 years of great abundance are coming in all the land of Egypt. And after 7 years of famine will come, all the abundance will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will ravage the land. So the abundance will be unknown in the land because that subsequent famine, for it will be very severe. Now as for repeating of the dream to Pharaoh twice, it means that the matter is determined by God, and God will quickly bring it about." So he's interpreted the dreams. Pretty straightforward interpretation. But I could see if you got that dream, you go, a cow eating a cow, a corn of ear eating a corn of ear, doesn't make any sense. It would be very, very disturbing. So what did the dreams mean? Which one? The baker? The baker was the one who was saved. The cupbearer was the one didn't. Okay. Moved his head, I believe, didn't he? Moved his head. Okay. The future. 7 years of good, 7 years of want. And it was going to be a savage famine. It wasn't going to be a light famine. It was going to be bad. Why were there two dreams? God was determined to do it. What did you say?
I was saying to confirm it.
To confirm it, yeah. Emphasis. They reinforced each other. It's not, it might happen, it is going to happen. Okay. Now let Pharaoh look for a man discerning and wise and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh take action to appoint overseers in charge of the land, and let him exact a fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt into 7 years of abundance. Then let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming, and store up grain for the food in the cities under Pharaoh's authority, and let them guard it. Let the food become as a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine, which will occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land will not perish during the famine. Now the proposal seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his servants. Then Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find a man like this in whom divine spirit?" So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has informed you of all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and according to your command, all my people shall do homage. Only in the throne I will be greater than you." He was just in prison a few hours ago. Did he only interpret the dream? Did Joseph stop at interpreting the dream? No. He also made a recommendation. He said, you know, there's going to be really a lot of food you're going to have, and then there's going to be a famine. Collect some of it. Store it. Guard it for when the famine happens. Do you think he expected to be put in the position he was in? Put in. This is an opinion. There is no answer. It doesn't say it one way or another. I don't think he did. I don't think necessarily he saw that coming. But it probably, when he did it, he went, okay.
Chuck, you know, the story of Joseph is one that's helped me a lot through some of the more tragedy-ridden times of my life. Because you see a progression.
Mm-hmm.
Where did Joseph get the idea to make this recommendation of Pharaoh? We're not told that God
gave him. He ran Potiphar's house. He ran the prison. I think he ran the prison.
He very well may have ran the prison.
I think he ran a lot of what was going on in the prison.
Through a lot of that, he learned how to manage things.
Yep.
He learned how to quickly come up with ways of resolving things and managing things. And so what we see through this, though, being sold into slavery, being put into prison, you know, we see a progression of things. And, you know, a lot of times in our own lives, we look at things and go, why in the world? Why in the world is this happening? It wasn't the world like done. You know, we ask these questions and we look at the tragedies of our own life. Perhaps God is leading us to better things. Perhaps God is using us in ways that we can't possibly foresee. And sometimes even this tragedy after tragedy.
After tragedy, yeah.
Perhaps God is building within us a skill that He needs us for.
And Abraham did that. Joseph did that. A lot of the people that we have in the Bible, it did that. Do things get formed unless they're pushed to get formed in a certain form? Yeah. I mean, if it's tested, if it's pushed, if it's molded, it's going to be painful. Okay. If it's just left alone and said, "Oh, kind of do what you're going to go do." I mean, it's like a bush. If you want it to be in a certain shape or something like that, you're going to be trimming off the limbs. Well, that does cause damage to it, but it puts it into the shape that you want it to, and it can be something of beauty. But just left alone, a bush grows good, and it's going to grow all over the place, and it's eventually going to hurt itself because it's going to grow in ways where the limbs are too long and things like that, and it's going to cause damage. We're not a tree, but in the same way, God molds us if we allow him to mold us. And some of the things that happen to us, we go, God, why is this happening to me? It'll make you stronger. But at the time, it's hard going through it. What were you going to say? Yes.
And the being the type of a person that in reality would save the children of Israel.
Yeah, he went from being a spoiled brat to someone who was very, very caring for his brothers and his family. No, he was a spoiled brat because he was spoiled. He was spoiled badly by his mother and his father. That's true.
Did you ever think that maybe that was
part of God's plan to allow him to be a spoiled brat? Or did he use the situation because of the way his parents were? Yeah. We may actually get to that this morning. That's, well, yeah, him and his mom, the word is colluded. Yeah, but he's, Dad sent me out here to check on you, you know, I mean. His dad wasn't very sensitive to the situation he put his son in either. Well, hey, son, why don't you go out there and check on your brothers? Oh, there's a good plan. Oh, I'm going to have to get some of Doug's time next week. Everybody's done that to me, so I'm going to do it to somebody else. Okay. How much authority did he have? He's the second most powerful man in the world. In the world. From being in a dungeon. Egypt is the power in the world this time.
It was his ideas that made Egypt the power that it eventually became.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. And even the idea of bringing his people to Egypt made Egypt what Egypt was, because they were the arms and the legs that helped build it. Turned out to be the slaves, but they were the arms and legs. Okay. Then Joseph could not, this is jumping ahead after Joseph has been there for quite a while. We're into the second year now of the famine. Okay, So I've jumped ahead 9 years in a chapter. Then Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried, "Have everyone go out from me." So there was no man with him when Joseph made himself known to his brother. He wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard of it. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. It is my father still alive?" But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Please come closer to me." And they came closer. And he said, "I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt." I'm sure when he said, "Come closer," they went. They didn't come a lot closer, because here's the most powerful man, second most powerful man in the world. And he just revealed to them, "I'm the guy you sold into slavery." So what's this situation described between Joseph and his brothers?
Tense.
Okay, it's a tense situation, but they've been now reunited. He's got them all in the room. He kept Benjamin to bring them all back, right? Remember, he kept Benjamin? Put a cup in there? He put a cup in there to keep one of them, to bring them all back. But he's trying to reconcile with his brothers. Was Joseph really trying to make him feel guilty? Nah, he cried out. I mean, this was painful. He finally could reveal who he was to his brothers. And I don't know how many times he wanted to so bad, from the previous trips they had taken to say, I'm your brother. I'm your brother. What do you think their initial reaction was? Oh no, we thought you were dead. Okay. They thought he'd take vengeance. I mean, were the Egyptians kind people? Nah, he went there as a teenager. He'd been there for 9, probably 5, I don't know, maybe 20 years. So, now do not be grieved or angry with yourselves, because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land for these 2 years, and there's still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth, and to keep you alive by great deliverance. Now therefore, it is not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh and the Lord of his household and the ruler over all the land of Egypt. How is Joseph trying to make him feel? Comfort. We're about to run out of time. He's trying to cleanse them of any anger or grieving, wasn't he? He's trying to say, guys, it isn't your fault. You didn't do it. I'm going to jump ahead. Come on. So what's foreshadowed about God with Adam? Bruise the head of the serpent. Christ in the story of just Abraham alone. Through his seed, bruise the head of Satan. Okay? And that's in Revelation, but also it's about Abraham, about the promise, is that through your seed, all mankind will be blessed. Foreshadowed in Christ about the story of Abraham and Isaac. God sent his son, okay? The father offering his son for sin. In the story of Joseph, the bell just rang. Where is it foreshadowed? A redeemer? He was sacrificed by his brothers to save his people. It's foreshadowed in a lot of the patriarchs. Next week, Doug is going to continue on, but it's in the Mosaic period that he's going to talk about what was foreshadowed. Thank you.